Music and Booze with Mo is produced and distributed by the Center for Culinary Culture, home of the Cocktail Collection, and is available wherever fine podcasts can be heard. The Center for Culinary Culture, telling the story of food and drink, one taste at a time. Welcome to Music and Booze with Mo. I'm Mo Herms, and I've worked in the music industry most of my life, so have met some pretty amazing musicians over the years. I also love a good cocktail, and I've encountered some really interesting bartenders as well. It seems that there is a lot of crossover, so when I can, I like to talk to musicians and bartenders about music and booze. Join us at the bar, won't you? Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by The Mermaid, a cozy neighborhood bar with an aquatic flair in the Little Tokyo area of downtown LA. Open 7 days a week, featuring tropical cocktails and snacks, The Mermaid also has a daily happy hour from 5 to 8 p.m. Follow The Mermaid on Instagram at TheMermaidLA to hear about upcoming events and check them out at TheMermaidLA.com. Head to 428 East 2nd Street, Los Angeles, for a drink. Today we have not one guest, but two, Dr. Nicola Nice and TJ River. The two of them bring a deep, deep, extensive knowledge and background in marketing and sociology. And what they did with that was create Pomp and Whimsy. It is a brand that brings us a delicious gin liqueur. So listen now on how they mixed music into all of that and a whole lot on the history of women in the cocktail world going back centuries. So yeah, why don't you guys both introduce yourselves? Nicola, you go first.
Absolutely, yes. So I am Dr. Nicola Nice, and I am the founder and CEO of Pomp and Whimsy. My background is in research. I'm a sociologist by training. So I've spent the last 20 years in consumer insights and brand strategy. So before starting Pomp and Whimsy, I was running an insights agency out of New York called Think Conservatory. And about half of my work was in the spirit space, which is actually how I met my co-founder, TJ.
TJ.
Hello.
Hi.
My name is TJ River. I'm a co-founder and creative director with Pomp and Whimsy. I caught my break several years ago at MCA Records. Absolutely, like that sort of set everything in place for me, both creatively and professionally and personally. Mm-hmm. Really kind of unbelievable looking back. But since then, I've carried on doing making art for music packaging, film, key art, and, you know, ultimately a lot these days, liquor, wine and spirit. So, you know, all the fun stuff.
Yeah. So you did your evolution from being in the music industry and winding up in the spirits biz just come because of the type of work you were doing? These are the client you just evolved into it, or was it a happy accident? You loved spirits anyway.
like with our, you know, first break, so much of it is the connections. And I just met an unbelievable network of people working in the music industry. I think the most notable one in terms of how a direct sort of line that you can draw from then to now is one of the artists that I worked with that we actually carried on after I left MCA Records was Sammy Hagar, who had a tequila company. And that ultimately led directly to our relationship with Nicola and all the rest of the team.
There you go. And Nicola, you, in your background,
you were researching, you said you were a sociology person. Mm-hmm. This is your background is in that and studying trends and all this, but you were studying spirits as well. And this is something I remember from when I saw you speak quite some time ago, was you had all this information that made so much sense that I hadn't thought about women's role in the spirits world historically as well. Did you discover that at that time? Is that kind of how you got into it? Or how did you wind up becoming full-time spirits?
Yeah. So I've always been obsessed with people and obsessed with behavior. So whether that is the micro behaviors that sort of drive how we interact with things and products, or the more sort of cultural and social behaviors that sort of drive how we interact with brands. So that's always been my kind of main fascination that's sort of gone through all aspects of my career. And as I was running my agency, at the same time as sort of all of this brand work and this sociological and anthropological work, I also really developed an interest and an expertise in what I would describe as gender dynamics in marketing. Mm-hmm. So when I wasn't working in spirits, I was working a lot in the field of fashion and beauty and personal care. And it's and much like TJ says, I think, you know, so often your interest is sort of driven a little bit by happenstance and what sort of falls into your lap. And then your passions kind of take over the things that, you know, you continue and you drive through with. So I'm originally from the UK, and I came to New York in 2007 as a researcher with a UK-based company. Mm-hmm. And in landing in New York City, not only was I at this sort of pivotal point in my career where I was building a business and, you know, really going places there, but I also discovered this city and its incredible hospitality culture. And through that, discovered the cocktail. And to me, coming from the UK, where, you know, we drink gin and tonics and mm-hmm. you maybe drink martinis, but it's not really quite the same culture. The cocktail was born in the US. That sort of parallel interest, I think, is what really directed me ultimately into going full time into the spirits industry. But with regards to gender specifically, when working in sort of fashion and personal care and beauty, and then pivoting over to the work that we'd be doing in spirits, it just always struck me the way the female consumer is very underrepresented by the brand and marketing landscape. And that's not supported by the data on female consumption, right? So this was always something that as a woman, it bothered me, right? Why are there no brands that really speak to me as a woman, and the ones that are there sort of talk down to me and put my needs in terms of calorie or diet or sexiness or bored housewife or mm-hmm. whatever we want to call it. And then obviously as an academic, I was like, wait, is there some sort of law here that I don't know about? You know, is there some sort of unwritten rule that says you can't market spirits to women, that we shouldn't be doing this? And then, of course, as an entrepreneur by that point, I just felt like, well, there's a lot of money being left on the table by not taking this consumer seriously.
Mm-hmm. So what made you guys, what got you together to team up and create this product? I mean, it's a beautiful product. It looks amazing. There's fun marketing around it. I like the series that you guys are doing right now with the Send a Cocktail kind of mm-hmm. coctogram. That sounded dirty. But you know, I'm forgetting what it's called right now. But, you know, the
cocktailgram.
Yes. Yeah.
So TJ and I were working on parallel coasts, and we came together. TJ was, he'll tell you more in a second about his segue into this, but we came together through a client. So we were introduced through Campari, actually, was the client, and it was on an innovation project developing at that time a new vodka. Like, the world needed another vodka, but apparently
totally.
It did. But I think we during that project became not just us, actually, there are five founders in Pomp and Whimsy. So there's two from my agency and three from the agency that TJ was working with at the time. And I think that we really just gelled. We gelled intellectually, we gelled professionally, and the more work we started doing together, this one project then led to more and more and more together. Of course, we became good friends and big admirers, I think, of each other's work. And so as we had this sort of mutual interest in the space, at some point the conversation sort of came around where, you know, we're doing all of this great work, we're producing all of these great ideas, we don't get to see them all the way to through fruition. And worse, we often see the best of our ideas not, you know, pissed up against a wall, mm-hmm. is sometimes how I like to describe it, getting lost in the mm-hmm. in the mire and the politics of large corporations. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, much like a lot of founding stories, at some point we sat down and said, you know, we should just do this ourselves. Thankfully, everyone decided to jump in together.
Mm-hmm. So what made you guys decide on the product? You when you jumped in together, you said, let's offer something in the cocktail space. But you're offering a pretty unique product. So
yeah,
what was the motivation behind that?
So I think that, you know, TJ and I and the other members of the team had developed this way of working together where we take insight and we use insight to inspire creativity, mm-hmm. and then we use creativity to explore and dig for more insight. And it became this very sort of cumulative, quite proprietary innovation process that mm-hmm. we realized we'd landed upon. And the big insight, of course, coming into this was this sort of question of why don't spirits that are marketed towards women or are just about the female story or the female experience succeed? Is it because it can't be done, or is it because it hasn't been done well? And I think we all collectively came to this conclusion that it just hasn't been done well, right? Mm-hmm. So let's start from this sort of basis that if we were to approach this with a completely fresh eye, how would we do this? And we took ourselves through the same process that we went through with clients, which is A, digging into the consumer, so doing a lot of consumer research, using creative as a way to help explore the consumer mindset and create vision that we could, you know, potentially build a brand into, at the same time as then going deep into the category and going deep into the history of the spirit and understanding where it came from and connecting those dots. And then that's just the sort of insight piece. What then TJ brings to it is the vision of how that comes to life. And mm-hmm. only he can describe how that part of it works, because it's magic to me.
Well, I think that's your cue, TJ.
I don't know if I can explain it. Actually, I pray and I say thank you for the creative gifts. How do you explain creativity? I don't know. It's
that
crazy.
That is true. Well, what made you guys decide on a gin liqueur? You know, I think that's what you launched with, right? The gin liqueur.
So, I mean, it came from the research, right?
Okay. So you just felt there aren't any good gin liqueurs out there, or gin liqueur is a kind of a safer, easier way, a gentle way to get out into this market or something. It's not a frightening.
Yeah. we felt like we knew the white spirit space very well. So mm-hmm. a lot of the work that we'd been doing together was in, as I mentioned earlier, in the field of vodka. Mm-hmm. So we knew that space was, we knew very well. So we knew what the sort of, design rules were, at the same time as what the consumer rules were and the category rules were. Mm-hmm. And in doing that work, and speaking with a lot of consumers, we would have a lot of discussions about ideal, right? We'd have a lot of discussions about what's missing. What does your ideal white spirit look like? And it was in those discussions with consumers that this idea of this lightly botanically infused spirit that could be sipped straight, that was, you know, amazing in a simple serve with bubbles, or could be the basis of a, you know, really lovely but simple cocktail. And that's when we'd sort of stop the conversation and say, well, really what you're describing there is gin. That really what gin is, it's a botanically infused white spirit, et cetera. And at which point we would get pushback from consumers who would say, well, I don't like gin. You know, gin is my uncle's drink, or gin tastes like Christmas trees, or, I had a bad experience with it in college, or it messes me up. And we realize that there's a cognitive dissonance going on between what gin sounds like as a concept and what it tastes like if you've never had it before and just heard that concept. It's not, the two don't necessarily match up. And then, as I said, the second piece of this was digging back into the category, the history of the category mm-hmm. itself. And, you know, I always knew growing up in the UK that gin had this sort of slang association of mother's ruin, right? Mm-hmm. And then people would joke about that. But what I didn't realize was that the term mother's ruin actually kind of came out of propaganda that was intended to really subjugate the female consumption of the spirit at the time. And before that happened, gin was actually known as mother gin, and it was a slightly different association. So as we dug more and more into what gin used to be, and especially around this time when women were making it, they were drinking it, you know, they were creating their own rules around it, mm-hmm. we discovered that, hey, the style of gin was also different, right? So people were sweetening it, and they were infusing it, and they were adding bitters to it. And they were often buying these ready prepared gins that were called gin cordials. So kind of putting two and two together, like, okay, maybe we can bring back this lost style. Mm-hmm. Maybe we can update it for this modern consumer in a way that she would want to consume it today. Mm-hmm. And maybe we can tie all of this together with this mission of just writing women back into the story. Mm-hmm. And so that's sort of how the whole thing came together.
I love that. It's a very educational approach. Oh, yeah, TJ?
I was just going to say, you know, there's a common thread in a lot of what Nicole is saying, and there's a lot of listening and observing and trying things. And, you know, that's a thread that goes through to things on the creative side too. And, you know, it almost to the point that when it came time, I think we had, Nicola, and had a pretty good idea of what we wanted this to kind of taste like and do functionally, but a lot of it became about setting a mood and approaching it that way. And, you know, how that kind of translates from a brand perspective is, you know, setting the stage and sort of making a comfortable environment. Mm-hmm. The water's warm, you know, so all those preconceived things around gin or, you know, where you might be a little bit uncomfortable, we're trying to show, you know, through visuals and our messaging and everything that, hey, this is, you know, this, the water's fine. Come on in.
Well, speaking of the visuals and the messaging and such, one of the things I noticed about your brand some time ago was the playlist aspect of it. Mm-hmm. That I want to say monthly, you guys promote that, hey, here's our latest tunes that, you know, to sip along with while you're trying the cordial and everything. And that's something I always talk with people about. Like, what are you listening to while you're having that drink? What are you fixing up? What is your mood music and all of that? So who was that, you, TJ, that started that music side of things?
I think initially, like with a lot of this, I have to give my wife some credit for it too. A lot of it goes back to those days at MC Records where I cut my teeth. Mm-hmm. Because that was sort of the table setting for this, you know, relatively abstract idea of pairing or, you know, trying to show what a sound music looks like. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a pretty abstract thing. I mean, I'm by no means a scholar on the subject, and there's some science behind it. I think there's some, you know, sociological aspects to it too, and pop and culture, how all that plays into, you know, the things that we associate with sound. But, you know, this in a way was that in reverse. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, kind of in, I think another inspiration is, you know, we're kind of in a golden age of television mm-hmm. here, and taking a lot of kind of inspiration from, just awesome needle drops in so much of what these great, you know, music producers are bringing into TV shows and whatnot. But so, and the wife angle too, she worked at Anthropology for a stretch. And when we talk about, you know, brands that encapsulate, you know, a mood, a vibe, mm-hmm. a place, I mean, they're very well known for setting that in their stores. And they also, have their own streaming playlists as well. So there was sort of an original point of inspiration. So music, like stylistically, if I had to sort of put and underline on one specific thing, one way to describe is sort of, this was our jumping off point, you know, like with so much of the brand, there's a lot that we can do with it, but French pop kept coming up time and time again.
Interesting.
in these different places. And I think the thread there is, if you think about, you know, our drinker, it's, she is stylish, you know, a lot about what you think about when you think about French, you think about French pop. She's stylish. She's put together. She clearly knows her stuff. But there's a sort of effortlessness about her. She doesn't take herself too seriously, right? And so that's something that we go back to a lot with Pomp and Whimsy, is that duality of things. And not so much a duality, but yeah, how those things are working together. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, with that as a starting point, it's like, well, I mean, so much of this sentiment crosses cultural boundaries, music boundaries, and like, you can find that vibe, what you're looking for, pretty much anywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, so with the help of the sort of stuff I was exposed to, the people that turned me on to things. And then of course you have to give credit these days to the algorithms of these places, because it makes it so much easier than having to dig through records. You know, once you sort of start on a thread, then you can lean a bit more on the things that you know, and the, you know, observations we've had, and the, you know, things that we've heard, and start to see how these things kind of come together.
Yeah, the algorithms can help you go down a rabbit hole for sure. Yeah. So I love the French pop thing, and then I have to ask you, what era French pop? Because are we going like 60s French pop, or is it still even modern?
Yeah, for sure. 60s France Gall and Brigitte Bardot and Francois Hardy.
That, you know, the really chic ones.
Probably.
Laisse tomber les filles, un jour c'est toi qu'on le sera. Laisse tomber les filles, laisse tomber les filles, un jour c'est toi qui pleureras. Non, pour te plaire, il n'y aura personne d'autre que toi, personne d'autre que toi. Alors tu te rappelleras tout ce que je te dis là, tout ce que je te dis là. Alors tu te rappelleras.
Yeah,
we play music at all of our online events. So when you arrive into our virtual tasting room, you're going to be greeted with, you know, a stream of music from our Spotify that sort of sets the tone and sets the scene before you come into the tasting room. And again, when you leave, you know, when we cap the event, and as TJ said, as we go back into more live and in-person events, I think music will always be important.
A part of it. Well, Nicola, I wanted to ask you a bit more about, it veers a little away from Pomp and Whimsy, but not really, because one of the things, as I mentioned before, and that brought you to this was the history of everything. And you were talking about the history of gin, say, in the UK, and the Mother's Ruin and all of that, which I find fascinating and something that we don't think about, is just how important the role of women in the production of spirits has been historically, even, as well as the creation of cocktails, like, you know, say in the 50s and 40s and all of that kind of stuff. So was there a particular story or anything that kind of turned you to, I need to make this more of my life, not just seeing the cocktail world in New York, but anything that you learned where you're like, I need to be a part of this. I'm going to make myself part of this history as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, once you're a researcher, you're always a researcher, right? So it is one of those mindsets and skills that you develop that means that you never do anything just because. You always want to learn and understand and get insight first. And so the more I sort of dug into the history of the cocktail and the way that it is told, like I say, I came to the U.S., somewhat of a blank slate from that point of view, you know, and discovered it, and it very quickly became just very much a part of my Epicurean lifestyle, right? A cocktail is the thing that sets the tone for the whole evening. And I absolutely, as I said, like, fell into cocktail culture, fell into the wider hospitality scene around it, and very quickly became transfixed by it. But the more I sort of dug into the history of it, the more I was sort of, I felt like it had been written from a very one-sided point of view. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when you read contemporary books on the history of the cocktail, it's very much told from the point of view of the bartender. Mm-hmm. And, you know, 99% of the time, those bartenders were male, and so were their patrons. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, that is a very important part of the cocktail history. But just like with any history where women are shut out of the conversation, it makes you wonder, mm-hmm. well, what were they doing? Mm-hmm. And what were they saying? And what were they writing? And, you know, again, kind of always drawing this parallel between what we see in consumers now, right? And then what we learn when we go back and we look at that same consumer in history, looking at the female consumer today, because we've obviously over the last sort of 10, 15 years mm-hmm. been going through an enormous cocktail renaissance. Mm-hmm. And again, it's easy to think that that renaissance has been driven by bars and has been driven by bartenders. But of course, if it wasn't for all the cocktails that were being made in the home, then it would never have gone mainstream. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what happened 100 years ago after Prohibition. You mentioned the 40s and the 50s as yeah. a cocktail went mainstream after Prohibition. It was really the women and the hostesses who, and their role as the chief entertainer of the home, who really drove that popularity. And if it wasn't for women mixing cocktails and having cocktail parties, mm-hmm. we wouldn't have things like cocktail dresses and cocktail mm-hmm. tables and cocktail napkins and all the things that go around a cocktail to make an event out of it. Mm-hmm. I think that we, when we go to a bar, we go for the theater and the knowledge of the bartender. But when we go to someone's home, we go for the warmth and the hospitality of the host or mm-hmm. the hostess mm-hmm. and what she brings to that. So I think Pomp and Whimsy has very much been an outlet for the rediscovery of all of that, and a platform and a place to bring it back and bring it to life and retell those stories and mm-hmm. wrap it into the, you know, the values and the personality of the brand. Mm-hmm.
Are there any women that you discovered when you were doing all this research that stand out to you as someone who needs some more recognition? Or there were just so many?
There are so many, mm-hmm. honestly. You know, I think that it's interesting that we're having this conversation right now, actually. Of course, we are 5 days into Women's History mm-hmm. Month.
And, now, to be fair, we did try to do this interview months ago. It just worked out this way.
I know.
All of us. But now the timing is such that we can talk about this as well.
Yes. Well, one of the projects that we've been working on actually for Women's History Month, which will be coming live inside the next week or so, is a bibliography of books and references written by women from the birth of the cocktail. So from the early 1800s all the way through to and up to and including Prohibition. We've stopped the project temporarily for there. Mm-hmm. We then intend to sort of go into mid-century at a later date. But we have right now, TJ, 33 works, I think, that and one of the things that I was very conscious of is every time I tried to search for, you know, cocktail books written by women or women in the history mm-hmm. of the cocktail, I couldn't find one resource that told me, you know, so I could go to cooking history websites and I could go to bartending websites and I could go to different libraries, but I couldn't find one resource that pulled together all of the impact that women have had. Mm-hmm. And I would say within that, that if we were to talk about specific women, first of all, I think we sort of have to talk about the genres of book that were influential, mm-hmm. right? So when we talk mm-hmm. about the history of bartending, it's very easy to see that there are certain celebrity bartenders who have written, you know, the definitive guide mm-hmm. That has then gone on to influence generations of bartender. But women in the home were not necessarily the audience for those books, and yet they were mixing drinks. You know, punches and cups and cobblers were around before Jerry Thomas was making them, for example. Mm-hmm. And so we were really looking for, we weren't trying to be forensic historians and say, you know, well, who really invented it? We were just trying to understand, well, who may have influenced the women of the time and what might have influenced what people were drinking in the home? And that's when we'd sort of discovered these different books. So you have cooking books mm-hmm. You know, those date back to the first truly American cooking book was in around the 1820s, and Mary Randolph was the name of the writer. And in her book, you're going to see recipes for punches and things like possets and things like that. Mm-hmm. And then you have another genre of cocktail of recipe books that have recipes in them that were more sort of household management guides. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. cooking and making drinks was very much part of how a wife was expected, one of the things she should know, yeah. right, in running a household. And then we have our etiquette guides and the right way as a lady to know how to host your guests. We have our entertaining guides. And then later on, we even have our beverage guides and our drinks manuals. Mm-hmm. So it kind of runs the gamut. But yeah, in the course of this research, there are so many women who every time you sort of dig into them, each of their stories becomes really, really fascinating. I think that probably the most influential cookery and household writer in the US who wrote extensively on not just drinks, but every aspect of running the household. And the reason why she is influential is because she sold so many copies of her book was Eliza Leslie. So if you go and you look at Eliza Leslie's work, you're going to get a really good understanding of how women were using alcohol in the home and the different, not just mixed drinks they were making, but you know, brandies and liqueurs and wines mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. and tropes and all the things that we now use to make great cocktails.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's fascinating. And I know I've read somewhere about even further back than the 1800s, how often there would be one woman who was responsible for making like the village's beer or right. for, mm-hmm. you know, the moonshine, as it, whichever version it was at that time. And then everyone yeah. went to that person to get their allotment of right. liquor. And it was the female doing it. And then you have, mm-hmm. you know, in the 20th century, I'm trying to remember, I believe it was something like, it wasn't until like 1972 that a woman could even work behind the bar.
Right.
Unless she was related to the owner. Or owned mm-hmm. the bar themselves, which is wild to think about. You know,
it's yeah, not that long ago.
It wasn't that long ago at all that, you know, and you could only be like a hostess or a server, but you couldn't mix the drinks. A female mm-hmm. could not mix the drinks. TJ, I like how you're just sitting there just nodding like, oh, it's crazy. All the stuff that you've learned during the process of this. And I think, yeah, there you are unmuted. How has this been for you? I mean, obviously it's been a learning process for you. You came from the music industry and I've worked in the music industry for a long time. You can see on my rock and roll posters behind me. both spirits and music have been very male-centric for such a long time. I've felt pretty fortunate that most of my couple decades in the music industry, I haven't really dealt with too much awfulness. It was kind of the more old school gentleman that would have the old school attitudes. but for you, transitioning, TJ, from kind of a music-centric world into a spirit-centric world, and a pretty female one at that, you know, what you've gone into, how's that been for you, that experience?
I think there's a thread there as well, and it's really, I think the number one thing as a creative and as a designer, as a creative director, the number one thing I have grown to learn and understand is that I'm not making things for me, you know, that's number one. And I think as soon as you sort of start into anything from that perspective, when you're trying to make something, it sort of, you know, squarely puts you in that position of like, again, observing and listening, you know, and just sort of seeing, you know, there's no bad input, you know, just having a very open, collaborative, you know, environment. And then, you know, it's been cool because it's like seeing, making these things and, you know, seeing people connect with them, who, you know, have things that they've been missing or, you know, on mm-hmm. any level, mm-hmm. like there's a power in that, to be able to deliver something to that. It is great. And inspiring, and you know, it also kind of helps in, you know, taking it out of, you know, myself mm-hmm. and putting it in that perspective.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, then I'll ask you guys the question that I ask everyone pretty much at some point, and it would be, what are you sipping at home and what are you listening to while you sip? And I can see TJ behind you, a bottle of Pomp and Whimsy sitting there looking lovely. And I'm like, are you sipping on that? And if so, what are you listening to? You're the music one, so you probably should answer that this question first.
I am, but it's
you don't
kind
have to
of
be
strange
drinking that.
Times and, you know, working from home and all of that. I am kind of ashamed to admit, but hey, we change and think times are different. I listen to way more podcasts.
Are you?
than I did before, which before I wasn't able to. But I think now just sort of having that voice, and most of the time it's just background stuff so that I can sort of, process and think about what I'm doing. But there's one artist in particular lately, Angel Olsen, is somebody that I'm always falling back to. Yeah, and the cool thing about her is that she has things that fit all the moods. She has the somber moods, and she also has the stuff where she's, sort of, crank things up a bit. Yeah. And stuff's a little, we've actually been able to, kind of feature some of her stuff that, is a little more danceable, a little more fun. And then in terms of what I'm sipping, I mean, it's been a relatively dry start to the year, generally speaking, but the Pomp does fit in nicely to that, just the lower alcohol stuff. And, other than that, it's just, a glass of wine occasionally. Just drinking stuff neat, very non-fussy, and why we even want to mix something a lot of the times, the Pomp and Whimsy, and just pairing it with, another spirit if I want something. And, that does a lot of the work for us. So,
yeah. Nicola, what about you?
Yeah. So, I wait with bated breath for TJ's music recommendations on the Weekly Whirl or whichever much cooler member of the team has the responsibility this week. Mm-hmm. but I just kind of on a personal level, which I guess is sort of represented in the brand, I love juxtapositions, right? So I love taking one genre, putting it with another and making something new with it, which, obviously Pomp and Whimsy, that's kind of what we're about, old and new and masculine and feminine and traditional and modern and serious and silly. And so on that sort of French pop theme, I've always loved Nouvelle Vague. I absolutely love, new wave music in general, but then you layer it with the juxtapose it with the French pop and it's just, it's perfect. So I love anything that sort of fits into that genre of, taking something from a different genre and then turning it on its head. That's always going to be a winner for me. And then to TJ's point, I think that at Pomp and Whimsy, we very much have the philosophy that, you don't need fancy ingredients or, difficult techniques to make a really good drink. And I would say that, probably 75% of what I drink is going to be, a variation on a really simple classic recipe. So Friday, I don't know, we happen to be speaking on a Friday afternoon. I'm on the East Coast. It's getting close to 5 o'clock. For me, Fridays are very much about the variation is going to be Pomp and Whimsy with citrus with sweets. So whether I'm making a daiquiri or a margarita, or a gimlet, I'm going to be using Pomp and Whimsy as the base, and then I'm going to be adding the spirit flavor, whether it is with rum or whether it is with tequila or whether it's with another gin, some lime, a bit of simple syrup, and I'm
You're
very
good.
Very happy.
Actually, TJ, you reminded me, with the low ABV has really picked up in the last couple of years just in the cocktail world, and you guys are primed for that. I don't know that you, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, I think you were already out when that stuff started kind of picking up.
That's
so
right.
You must have had some good discoveries around that during this time.
We didn't jump on that trend. Pomp and Whimsy is 60 proof, so 30%. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is because when we were doing our research, that's what our consumer told us she wanted. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, when we went back and we understood more about what gin cordials were, we realized that they came in at different proof points. You know, and Old Tom was a sweetened gin, but it was full strength, and then cordials came basically every layer below that. But yeah, women told us very clearly, I want to be able to have two of these and still be in control. And now I feel the same way. You know, if a cocktail is really good, you should automatically want a second one. And you shouldn't be under the table, you know, after a second one.
Absolutely. So where can we tell people? I mean, obviously you've got the Pomp and Whimsy website where people can go learn more about you, and you guys have a lot going on that website actually, and within your Instagram. So if you want to dive into that, like the Cocktailgram, I love this. And does that work nationally here in the United States? I haven't dived into it. So yeah, just explain these things. And we actually have more time, which makes me very happy. Just explain what you're doing. I mean, you are marketing people, but you're doing really fun marketing. So if you don't mind telling us about that, your Instagram, all of that, so we can send people your way.
Yeah. We're all about bringing the modern hostess's world and experience to life, right? So everything we do at Pomp and Whimsy is kind of coming from the idea that everyone loves the feeling of being a good host. Everyone loves to, it makes you feel really good when other people tell you you're a great host. So we're all about, how do we bring that feeling? How do we make you feel like the great host? How do we help you express your natural desire to be hospitable and warm to other people? So you're going to see that run through everything that we do. So the Cocktailgram initiative is actually something that was born out of COVID. So it was born during a time when, you know, we weren't all able to see each other, and yet we were wanting to connect and express sentiments. And maybe we were having remote happy hours and we all adopted Zoom and what have you. So the Cocktailgram was a digital way that you could create a cocktail for someone and send it to them with a toast to tell them that you're thinking about them and to invite them to a drink with you. So that's really what the cocktail, and yes, they're free. It's just a digital tool that you can use through our website anytime you want to mix your own cocktail and write a personalized toast. And, you know, if you go onto the website and you dig into our library there, you will find that there's lots of reading material. There's the lighter, more sort of lifestyle journal pieces that could be cocktail inspiration. It could be profiles of women from the history of the cocktail. It could be little hosting tips. We have a piece on the best way to toast, for example, and lift your glass. And then shortly in the next few days, probably by the time this goes live, you'll be able to access our bibliography if you want to take things a step further.
Super, super wonderful. And then TJ, I'll ask you about the playlists. I know that you aren't the only one responsible for them these days, but the playlists are weekly, or tell me about the playlists.
They are. They're currently parked, but we do have the playlist on Spotify. I believe it's Pomp and Whimsy. We've gotten really lucky with the Pomp and Whimsy handle so far. pretty much everywhere.
You haven't had to compete
Instagram,
with anyone.
Spotify, website. But yeah, we're trying. There's a kind of reinvention of what that might be, and you know, I think a lot of it is going to be, you know, how it's going to be as we come out of COVID, and a lot of that music expression is going to have a bit more IRL expression. And then I hope to see a bit more of it kind of come into our advertising and stuff as we can, depending what we can get away with.
Licensing and such.
But we know some talented people too, so I think there might be some different kind of expressions of music, you know, in different ways as extensions of that that original idea for the playlist.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you started doing the playlist, was it just to give people, like, here's a mood for you? What made you start? It was just that?
That's exactly it. I mean, you know, even though the reality might be that we're, you know, drinking and drinking alone, and sometimes drinking in silence a lot of the times.
True.
Yeah, I think, you know, setting a sort of aspirational view of like, hey, this, you know, this is kind of inspiring. Let's put on, you know, let's make a drink and put on a record. Just, you know, a lot of it too is just to encourage the whole idea of a weekly whirl, or, you know, sometimes we say whirl a while, this idea to just sort of take a pause in your day, you know, and just spin around a bit, forget about your worries.
I love that very, very much, because we all need that moment. And especially now, as you were saying, we're in this COVID time, which hopefully there seems to be light at the end of the tunnel there. But we are home. We are alone. And we need something to kind of change things up a little bit. And I can say that something like this, you know, listening to a list that somebody else made, not me. I didn't have to do this work. You know, here's a cordial. I can just pour it in, maybe a splash of soda or a squeeze of lime, and that's all I want. I don't have to work. I don't have to do anything, and just sit down and relax and enjoy it. And I appreciate that you guys have...
Right.
And you've created the full package.
When Nicola talks about, you know, being the best host you can imagine, that is 20 people, it's 4 people, sometimes that's 1 person. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes you want to host yourself and make it something special, you know, and that I think that spans a lot of a lot of experience.
It does, for sure. All right, well, cool. I think we've been talking for a little bit, so I think we can wrap it up. I don't know if you want to remind folks of where they can find you, whether it's individually or just you want to send them to Pomp and Whimsy or, you know, whatever. So rattle off your Instagrams and all of that.
Well, TJ's already shared our handle is pretty much the same across all of our socials, Pomp and Whimsy.
All right.
And I mean, if you want to find a bottle, you can certainly find us. I think we ship to around 13 states online. Or if you're in California, as I know you are, Mo, you can go into your local Total Wine or your local BevMo.
Yeah.
In many, many more independent retailers across the country.
Yeah, which is fantastic. Really fantastic. So don't go away, but I'm going to say thank you very much for being a part of this today. I really appreciate it and love the history lesson and love that you guys are looking out for us, basically, with the work that you're doing. So thank you.
So as you heard, they have many profiles, Instagram at Pomp and Whimsy, Spotify at Pomp and Whimsy. They have quite a few playlists there for you to dig through. And of course, the website where they have that bibliography that as of this recording is live. And I really can't wait to dig into it. I need to make some special time just to sit there and read all of the cool stuff that they have listed there. So check all of that out. Enjoy it. Have fun. Find some Pomp and Whimsy when you can. It's a really nice alternative to just some of the hard spirits that you can get used to drinking. It's so lovely. I want it to be summer already so that I can just sit outside with one sip of that, some ice, maybe a little splash of orange or something. Now I'm just fantasizing. Thank you so much, Nicola and TJ, for being on the podcast. Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by Barkeeper, a head shop for cocktail lovers, located at 614 North Hoover Street in Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Stop by for barware, vintage glassware, a carefully curated collection of spirits, and one of the most impressive selections of bitters anywhere. Follow them on Instagram and Facebook for information regarding spirits tastings. That's barkeepersilverlake.com. And also in the Virgil Village neighborhood of Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Thank you for tuning in to our barroom chats on Music and Booze with Mo. For more info about today's guest, or if you want to connect with me, check out my Facebook page, Mo Herms. please subscribe to the podcast and feel free to tell all your friends about it. While you're there, give the show a rating and a review. It really helps to get the word out. If you want to hear the playlists our guests have curated, search SheBMO on Spotify, SheBMO. Find pictures of the interviewees and the cool stuff they create on the Music and Booze with Mo Instagram account. Lower your expectations and join us at the bar. Till next time, cheers.